This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The life of a dynamic voice in the West Virginia music scene was cut short last fall, but he was widely published and that legacy lives on.
Well, here in West Virginia, we have great songwriters too, right? And so part of the motivation for the book was to kind of push back against Texas and its claim to have songwriting just completely covered.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Education leaders are taking stock of what the state legislature did and didn't do for schools in the regular session. Chris Schultz has the story.
Fred Albert, president of AFT West Virginia, expressed his concern over the passage of House Bill 5105 to the West Virginia Board of Education Wednesday morning. The bill removes private, parochial, and virtual schools from state vaccine requirements.
When someone's freedom then infringes upon the safety of others, I think we have a real concern. Why would we want to go back to the days of measles and mumps and rubella, chickenpox, polio?
Albert says he is signing a public letter to Governor Jim Justice urging him to veto the bill and asks board members and listeners of the meeting to contact the governor in opposition as well. Albert also expressed regret that Senate Bill 614, which would have allowed elementary teachers to remove disruptive students from their classroom, did not pass and told the board school discipline issues must be addressed. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
Farmers in America's heartland are watching the effects of a recent federal court ruling about a popular weed killer called dicamba. The decision stops the use of dicamba, saying the herbicide can drift to injure and kill desirable plants, bushes, and trees. However, the Environmental Protection Agency now says despite the ruling, farmers may use existing supplies on their fields this year. On the latest episode of Us and Them, we bring back a story from our archives about this ugly battle in farm country. Host Trey Kay and his colleague Loretta Williams head deep into farm country to hear from Bo Sloan. He's the manager of a national wildlife refuge surrounded on all sides by farm fields where dicamba is sprayed. Here's an excerpt from Us and Them's Dicamba Woes.
This area here, this is the Dale Bumpers White River National Wildlife Refuge and everything up this way.
The map shows a 55-mile-long ribbon of deep green. At its widest spot, the refuge is 10 to 12 miles across. The flatlands of the Delta hug the east side of the White River. Sloan points to another flat spot on the west side.
Right over in here, which is where we are currently, this is called the Grand Prairie. And although it looks really similar, it's not. You know, it's completely different soils. It's formed differently, that sort of thing.
And on this map, it looks like, I mean, you can even tell. The thing that makes it look like a quilt is agriculture.
That's right.
You're saying that this is farmland, right?
Yeah,
right,
this is
right,
all farmland.
Right. All that's farmland, all of this. Everything that you see, that this little patchwork of green squares, light green, dark green, you know, all of those are agricultural fields.
The refuge is surrounded north, south, east, and west by those farm fields. Sloan didn't know much about the dicamba debate until he got a call in the summer of 2021 from some University of Arkansas extension scientists. They'd been out looking at possible dicamba damage on farms in the area.
And they ask if I minded if they came to the refuge and looked, because they were getting a tremendous amount of complaints from farmers whose soybeans were being affected. And so I said, well, absolutely. I'd love to have you guys come and you can show me what it looks like if we have it. And went and rode a large amount of the refuge, but you're not going to hardly cover this refuge in one day. And lo and behold, it seemed like everywhere we went, we saw it.
Sloan saw the cupped leaves and exhausted droop, typical of a plant that has been damaged by dicamba exposure. University of Arkansas scientist Victor Ford was along for the ride. He specializes in the impact of herbicides on trees and sent Sloan a follow-up letter.
Number one, there were tree shrubs and understory plants damaged in all the areas we visited. The damage was slight, and all plants are expected to recover. The damage appeared to be in clumps. The higher elevations showed more damage than the lower elevations.
Loretta, as Bo Sloan was reading that letter, I thought, is that good news or bad news? They saw some damage that may be related to dicamba, but not dead plants or trees.
While scientists are still learning about the long-term impact of dicamba on trees and shrubs, the issue is something called sublethal doses. In other words, how many years can a tree withstand the effects of small amounts of dicamba before it really hurts a tree? And obviously, trees are everywhere. Bo Sloan was worried enough about the damage that he saw that he filed a complaint with the plant board a few weeks after his visit with the scientists.
Because it's affecting, it's affecting the stuff in our yard, in the lands that we hunt on, that we recreate on, be it public or private. Dicamba doesn't care, but when the conditions are right, it's coming, and it leaves its mark, And just like the letter said, is anything going to die this year? Nope, probably not. Do I think this is the first year that we've had this damage? Absolutely, it is not. Because now that I know what it looks like, I'm like, wow, we've been seeing this now for several years. So at what point does it get to where there is some mortality of trees associated with it?
That excerpt is from the latest Us and Them episode, Dicamba Wars. You can download the entire episode from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, NPR One, or Spotify. You can also listen online at wvpublic.org. Us and Them is supported by the West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and Fund for Investigative Journalism. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Partly sunny today, highs in the 60s and 70s. Tonight, a chance of rain and thunderstorms, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, breezy with rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 60s and low 70s. Support for WVPB is provided by Good News Mountaineer Garage, a nonprofit organization accepting donated vehicles to help a West Virginian get on the path to economic independence. More at goodnewsmountaineergarage.org. It was a shock when author, musician, and West Virginia University professor Travis Steimling died abruptly in November. They were 43. Folkways reporter Zach Harrell collected remembrances from colleagues, former students, and friends. He shared them recently on Inside Appalachia.
Sophia Enriquez didn't know it at the time, but one music history class in her freshman year of college would change the entire direction of her life. It was 2013, and the music department at West Virginia University was looking to hire another professor. As part of the interview process, the university wanted finalists for the position to teach a sample lecture, a job talk in academic lingo.
So I was in the guinea pig class that they gave their job talk to.
And in walked Travis Steimling. Steimling had grown up playing guitar in church as a child in Buchanan, West Virginia. They then went on to study trombone in college. That eventually led to a PhD in musicology from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and a teaching gig at Millikan University in Illinois. Now Steimling was looking to come back home.
They gave a job talk for a music history class and talked about country music and Taylor Swift, and that had everyone so excited. So yeah, that's how I met Travis.
Steimling, who used they-them pronouns, got the job. It was the beginning of what would be an extremely fruitful period, both for Steimling and WVU's music program. Over the next decade, Steimling established Appalachian Music and Appalachian Studies minors at the university. They published reams of articles and a shelf full of books. That includes co-authoring the autobiography of legendary session musician Charlie McCoy and compiling a book of interviews with modern West Virginia songwriters.
Well, here in West Virginia, we have great songwriters too, right? And so part of the motivation for the book was to kind of push back against Texas and its claim to have songwriting just completely covered. I think we do a really good job there.
That's Steinling in 2019, talking about the songwriter book with Elliot Parker of the Armstrong Neighborhood Channel. All these books and articles establish Steinling as a leading scholar in the study of traditional Appalachian music. But of course, Steinling wasn't just a scholar. They were a musician. So in addition to their academic pursuits, they founded the WVU Bluegrass and Old Time Band. Enriquez joined the band in her junior year. Though she originally came to WVU to study orchestral trumpet, she caught the bluegrass bug from some friends.
I just walked right into Travis's office one day and said, I think I want to do this. And they said, okay, well, sing me something.
Enriquez didn't really consider herself a singer, but soon she was belting the old Flatt & Scruggs tune, Rolling in My Sweet Baby's Arms, with Steinling backing her up on flat top guitar.
And so then they're like, okay, you're in.
They say, have faith in Jesus. They say, have faith in Jesus.
That's Enriquez with a couple of her bandmates on a record Steinling produced of songs by Wyoming County songwriter Shirley Stewart Burns. But Steinling didn't just help Enriquez find her voice on stage. She was nearing the end of her undergrad, unsure what to do next. But one day, Steinling sat her down and laid out the options.
If you take this path, here's what I see. If you take this path, here's what I see. And then they said, but I don't think you realize that you would actually be really great at doing what I do.
Enriquez went on to earn a PhD in ethnomusicology. On the day she received her doctorate, she also got a voicemail from Steinling.
Dr. Enriquez, this is Dr. Steinling calling for an important doctor business. But really, congratulations. I'm just a dang proud of you and thought I would call and wish it to you directly. Looking forward to celebrating with you next time we're together. Talk to you soon. Bye.
They always called me their, they were my academic papa. I know that they played that role for a lot of other people. A lot of my close friends, we were all mentees of Travis at some point.
Another of Steinling's many academic youngins was Mary Lynchott. She grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, the child of two classical musicians. Lynchott began studying classical violin at the age of five, but she fell in love with old-time and bluegrass music as a tween. In eighth grade, she made a fateful trip to WVU's Mountain Lair Student Union to see the university bluegrass band perform.
So, graduated high school, applied to WVU. That's the only school I applied for because I knew I didn't want to leave. I wanted to be in the bluegrass band. That was like one of my top reasons for going.
Lynchott ended up in Steinling's Appalachian Music and Appalachian Studies minors. She joined the bluegrass band. And like Enriquez, it was in that band that Lynchott found her voice.
Travis actually got me singing. Like, before college, I would never sing, especially in public. Like, I went to church and everything. I lip sang. I would not sing. I don't know why, but maybe it was an insecurity thing, but Travis was like, if you're going to be in the bluegrass band, everybody has to sing.
She started writing songs, compiling enough to record her debut album in 2022. Steinling produced that project and played and sang on several tracks.
I'll be here.
And Travis was always my first listener, my first reader of anything.
That was Mary Lynchott remembering Travis Steinling on Inside Appalachia. To hear more of that story and the rest of the episode, visit us online at wvpublic.org. West West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.